Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network, a Christmas edition of TNR. I'm your host, Steve K9 Kim, and joining me always from the beautiful city of San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm a little bummed I didn't get to see the interview, but other than that, you know, I'm doing pretty good. Let's talk a little boxing.
Yes, my cousins to the north, they were not going to allow that to be released. Absolutely not, said my uncle and cousin. If you want to call in, 347... Yeah, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. We'll take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. If you want to send us a question or comment via Twitter, you could do so at SteveUCNLive, at Gabriel_Montoya. But let's get started with round number one from Quebec City, Quebec. It was showtime. And the main event was for the light heavyweight title of the world, Adonis Stevenson, the stoppage in five rounds over Dmitry Sulkowski, and he retains his linear title. And we'll talk about what that really means later on, if anything. Also part of this quadruple header, Jojo Dan makes it 2-for-2 with another close decision over Kevin Dizier, winning a split decision in 12. Super middleweight snoozer Andre Durrell shuts down Derek Edwards over 12. And then light heavyweight sensation Artur Beterbiev gets off the canvas to stop Jeff Page Jr. in the second round. Gabe, I find this startling in many respects. At this point last year, Adonis Stevenson was basically the consensus fighter of the year. In 2014, he is boxing's punchline. Should he thank Al Haymon?
Well, it depends on how much he was getting paid for these fights. You know, it's not like he completely fell out of the public's eye. We did get to see him fight. We didn't see him in the big fights that we wanted to see him in, the big dangerous fights. Instead, he fought fights that, you know, he won, and it was tough, you know, for him. A little tougher than everybody expected. It kind of tarnished the brand. And this fight, I mean, he got it done, but it was, you know, like you say, like, you know, the Chris Rock line. He kind of did his job. So, I mean, I think if next year he doesn't come through with these big fights and he doesn't end up facing, you know, the winner of Kovalev, Pascal, and keeps saying he's the top dog while doing what he's doing this year, then he's an absolute joke. If in retrospect this year was about getting paid a little bit and making some title defense money, and then heading into the fray and risking something, then maybe he's a little smarter than we're giving him credit for.
Gabe, looking at that fight on Friday night, it was a dead audience up until the knockdown, which was very explosive, and the subsequent two trips to the canvas, which ended the fight. People were kind of sitting on their hands, and the reports are that a significantly lesser number of people showed up this Friday night than for the other fight against Fonfara. That suggests to me, and that Quebec region is a very strong, robust boxing market when it comes to fighters in that region. Okay, with that being said, if he has a big fight next year, the people will show up in droves once again. But there's already some talk, and I don't know how serious it is, but given the suspects involved, I'm inclined to believe them. They are actually talking about Stevenson Fonfara 2. Now, at that point, there's that old line from Aretha Franklin, who's zooming who? And the question I ask, because I don't, you know how my feelings are about this. Adonis Stevenson said after the fight, after he was whispered to by one of the Watson boys, that, hey, I'm the man, you all have to come to me. Here's the problem, Gabe. They all did try to come to him. He ran the other direction. So my question is, how seriously do we take his claim, or not his claim, but the fact that he's the linear champion? Because I think there's a philosophical debate here. Give me the guy that puts in the most amount of work within a division and does the most amount of damage, has the best-looking resume, not the guy that just happens to be the linear champion, Gabe.
The man makes the belts, not the other way around. I mean, they give you that credential, but, I mean, has anybody ever really respected somebody that got a belt that, you know, vacant-wise and, you know, a vacant belt or, you know, got it kind of gifted out of the ring and then we just immediately respected that person? No, it's about the reign. It's about what you do with it, you know. And I think, you know, Adonis probably feels like he's the man because he's kind of being treated like the man, you know. He's got a network that's deferring to him, putting his fights on, even though he's not really fighting anybody that we want to see him fight. He's getting his way. So, I mean, I feel like the king too a little bit. But, you know, I at the same time, and it's an interesting line because, you know, there's commentators and then there's journalists. And like last year, they gave Paulie Malignaggi, they being the BWAA, the Boxing Writers Association of America, an award for excellence in boxing journalism. But when you watch this fight, the narrative is he's not getting the fights that he wants.
Yeah.
The way they were saying that, that's not what actually happened. And so, you know, I'm not looking to them for journalists. I don't need them to break stories, but they do need to say history the way it happened. And that's not the way it happened.
Gabe, I was tweeting about that along with other people when they were phrasing it or framing it a certain way as if somehow Adonis Stevenson is a light heavyweight Gennady Golovkin. You know, Gennady Golovkin has not had the big fights because he hasn't had the opportunity. Guys that I think have consciously avoided him, whether it's economically or just from a risk-taking standpoint. Adonis Stevenson had the power to enforce fights. And when they use terminology like, well, he failed to land the big fight against Kovalev, Gabe, he was like that airplane that saw the runway and decided to fly right over it and head to another runway patch. Okay? And
yeah,
it's not like he didn't fail to get it. He refused it. And so there has to be some truth in advertising. And I just thought the way they were tiptoeing around the issue, again, that was a very agenda-laid announcing crew on that particular night on this particular subject.
But here's the thing. You know, the commonality is Al Haymon, of course, and, you know, in Showtime. And watching the Darrell fight, which was, you know, one of the last fights I watched today heading into the show.
Ugh.
And it was interesting that they were, I had to have some torture before the broadcast. But they did the same thing with him. And they talked about, you know, he really came to light. You know, Mauro is booming about him during the Super Six championships.
That he quit.
they stop at that and instead go, you know, would you really like a shot again at Carl Froch? And they make that the mission because Froch is kind of attainable. They don't mention Andre Ward, who he was supposed to fight, who's his buddy, who he probably didn't want to fight or something, but had a brain problem. They didn't mention that. They don't even mention him getting hurt at the end of the Arthur Abraham fight. They just go straight to the Carl Froch thing. I just think we're not conspiracy theorists, you and I. I think there's a narrative being told to us that's just not reality. That's on Showtime. I don't get it. I get it. But it's kind of sickening to me watching all these fights and what you called the Haymon Invitational. This isn't boxing. This is the beating of one guy by another guy. And a lot of times it's boring.
You know, at least Al Bernstein or Paulie Malignaggi could have at least brought up a doctor's note from Dr. Shaw High. And that's the last we'll say of it. Gabe, how much are you a believer on Beterbiev right now, 7 fights in? I don't make too much of the knockdown. That stuff happens. Guys could trip over a punch. It could be a balance shot. Guy hits the lottery. But Beterbiev, I think, is incredibly strong. He's got natural punching ability. But I still think of him as a little bit raw technically. I know people are saying, hey, in 2 fights he could fight Kovalev. Gabe, I don't think it's that easy.
I thought that was really weird after Kovalev won over Hopkins. So people were saying, immediately, rather than crown him, they were jumping for the guy that's going to beat him, and they were saying, yeah, Beterbiev is going to get it. He's the real deal, not Kovalev. I don't see that at all. Kovalev is very smooth. He moves his head. He moves his upper body. This guy's very stiff from the chest up. And that move that he, you know, it happened. People get countered, but he put himself in that position. He was backing straight up, not turning on an angle, and kind of pursuing something, kind of like reaching for the knockout, reaching for the moment. and he got himself in trouble, had to retreat, did it wrong, and got dropped. He didn't look terribly happy about his win, even though he kind of beasted out in the second round. I thought it was a bit of a rabbit punch that put him down, but and turned things around. But I mean, you know, it was an impressive win in that, you know, he'd get adversity and not lose his cool. But I don't see a jab either when he advances. He always puts his guard up and just comes straight forward rather than stepping with the jab. He's raw. He's got great punching power, obviously. He's tough, but now we know he can be put down, and he's got a lot to work on. But he's not beating Kovalev anytime soon.
And Gabe, we all fall into this trap where we love the potential and we project young guys and we say, he's going to be better than the guy that's there already right now. And
yeah.
The more I get into this, the more I think I learn one thing. You got to appreciate the guys who did it. It's that old saying about what does the word potential really mean? You know what it really means in sports when you say this guy has potential? That means you haven't done a damn thing. Give me the guy that's accomplished. And if you look at Sergey Kovalev, he's still right in the heart of his physical prime. And to really go out there and handle a master craftsman like Bernard Hopkins for 36 minutes, let me put it to you this way. I don't think Viterbiev could do that to Bernard Hopkins right now, and that's why everyone just needs to kind of let this thing develop. But I am excited, and every time he fights, I want to be there. But I still see a guy that's far from being a finished product ready to compete at the world class at 175. Gabe, between Jojo Dan and Kevin Bisier, a very good fight, heated up late. I thought Dan did more than enough late to eat this fight out. But did you see a guy that could really beat Special K, Kell Brook?
No, it was who was going to lose to Kell Brook sweepstakes. You know, that was basically what this fight was, and it was good. I mean, I caught it. I caught it late. I was on the 1 year anniversary tour weekend, so I saw it today. And I was expecting to be. You know, it was one of the ones I set aside and went, all right, I know I got to see. You know, Gary Russell Jr. and Chris Martin. So I'm going to save this guy for some action. And I didn't find it that exciting. It was okay. I think he gets picked apart by his Special K. He's just, you know, just straighter, stronger, faster, better angles, better feet, just better all around. It'll be impressive if Brook could put him down and stop him. But I don't see that. I don't know, maybe an accumulation.
And Gabe, you mentioned the Heyman Invitational. The card in Quebec City on Friday night actually provided some moments. I was generally entertained by it. The Durrell fight was a nice opportunity to take an early evening siesta. I actually did fall asleep from rounds 4 through 11, so no harm, no foul. I got something out of it. Saturday night in Sheldon, Washington truly was what I have dubbed the Al Heyman Invitational, all his clients from Julian Williams, Gary Russell, Julius Jackson, all notching victories. Gabe, we were joking about this on Twitter on Friday afternoon, but it kind of reminded me when my days as a young pro wrestling fan in the early to mid-80s when you'd see these guys who are definitely the A-sides, the stars, like Jimmy Superfly Snuka or Roddy Piper or Hulk Hogan, Sergeant Slaughter. And on Saturday afternoons, which were the free shows on either Channel 9 or Channel 11, would be what you call the jobbers, the guys that were professional opponents in wrestling that are brought in to lose, like Barry O, Steve Lombardo, SD Jones. And you knew that the outcomes were predetermined. Well, Gabe, on Saturday night, I saw a lot of Barry O, I saw a lot of SD Jones, and I saw a lot of Steve Lombardi.
Yeah, it was, it was Washington Generals. I was wondering if all the guys that lost showed up on the same bus together. You know, really, it was just like, you just watch it, and I'm sitting here just the whole time going, it just isn't the boxing that I grew up watching. This isn't competitive. Watching a guy just, like, you know, I like J-Rock. I really am a big fan of Steven Edwards. I loved him when I just read his column and wasn't even covering his fighter. But this was such a one-sided fight. It made me wonder, what's up with Freeman? Why isn't he listening to his corner? Why isn't he throwing back? You know, he throws the jab, he lands it, and then he just misses wild in his next two shots. Doesn't do anything. And it's just strange. Like, it reminded me of the Jonathan Banks-Antonio Tarver fight. Banks just wasn't throwing at all. And I'm like, what's up with the Al Heyman opponents? Like, not throwing. And what's up with these one-sided fights? I mean, you got to blame the network on top of it. You know, Al's just taking care of his clients, and the fighters are just taking care of business. But the sanctioning bodies that are constantly okaying these one-sided cards and the network like Steven Espinoza, what is this? If I'm a Showtime subscriber, what the hell am I watching?
I think next year it's put up or shut up for everyone involved with Al Heyman, whether it's the promoters, whether it's the networks especially, because they are the ones who control the purse strings. And there's a lot of conjecture about what's going to happen with these fighters and these fights now that NBC is going to climb aboard. The latest that I've heard, Gabe, in regards to that, is the premiere of the NBC series will not be the Saturday after the Super Bowl, which I believe was February 7th. It may actually now be in early March. The word that I'm hearing is now that the investors are kind of asking, how are we going to make our money here, which I find to be a little dubious. Gabe, weren't you supposed to ask that question a long time ago just by the very nature of you being an investor? But this has not been a great year for Showtime. This is not – and I got to tell you, I yearn for the good old days, Gabe, when you could just blame Bob for the destruction of boxing. That's what I yearn for, those good old days. Blame Bob.
Remember it used to be, I remember my first days of writing, people would find out I write about it or whatever you wanted to call it at the time, blog about it, when I was living in Sacramento. And people were so kind of backwards about boxing. They'd go, did Don King really ruin boxing? That's like one of the top probably five questions I've ever been asked, like on a regular basis. Now it's blame Bob. But you really look at this, and what is to the detriment of boxing more than anything? Like the top champions not fighting on a regular basis, giving other people opportunity. But this, like, you have to wonder. I know that it's like you have to have a certain amount of rounds per card that goes on anywhere, in California or Nevada. But what about competitive rounds? Is there a rule about that?
Like, that's a great question.
Because we're not getting that. I mean, what is it that they're showing us? It's like watching a live movie where you know who's going to win. You're pretty sure it could be a knockout. The only suspense is going to be a knockout or is he going to win by decision? That's the only suspense here. There's nobody seems to have a chance to win in these fights. It's kind of like watching fixed fights, isn't it?
I've always said about fixed fights in the modern era, if you have a soft commission, not the most courageous managers, and complicit promoters and state commissions, you don't even need to fix fights. You could just have cards like you did on Saturday night. And here's from our good friend Amilcar, who tweets us, Jabroni, plural Jabroni, a performer whose primary role is to lose to established talent. Hashtag Heyman special. Yeah, there's no argument here. Here's a tweet from Ernie Gabione, our good friend. He has a couple of questions. Number one, name your three breakout stars for 2015. Also, number two, with Wilder, Stiverne, and possibly Vladimir Klitschko's return to the U.S., can heavyweights in the U.S. thrive? Gabe, going to Ernie's first question, I think the first guy that I look at as a breakout star, I think Julian Williams. I don't think he's going to be a star, but I think he can become a young champion. I think he's going to be a significant fighter. I like Errol Spence a lot. And maybe I'm a little bit premature in this, but I think Felix Verdejo, he may not win a championship this upcoming year, but I think his popularity will only grow and burgeon from this time forward.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he's on the fast track. Errol Spence is a guy, though, I think it's got the intangible. We haven't got to know his personality a little bit, not too much, but I think that he's a guy that I've talked to him a few times one-on-one. I just really like him. I think there's much more to know about him as a person, and he's just maturing, but I think he's got a very pleasing style. Breakout star, I want to say, because we already know who he is, I don't know if he's asking about prospects or not, but I think Keith Thurman, given the opportunity, given the right fight, could start the year big and end the year big. And be like a breakout, possibly fighter of the year candidate, if Al lets him.
Another name that I look out for, I think, can grab a foothold, Gilberto Ramirez, who will be fighting on HBO January 21st. I think he's just at that precipice, and we're going to find out, can he really be a threat at 168? In retrospect, Gabe, what's interesting, as we took a look at some of these names, that 2012 Olympic class, especially with the U.S., I think it's going to be a pretty good class in relationship, not to how they performed in the Olympics, where they were a complete bust. I mean, they really were the worst performing team in our nation's great history at the Olympic boxing. But as professionals, Errol Spence looks very good, and I think Joseph Diaz looks very good. And there's a couple of other fighters,
yeah,
I think, if they're developed properly, do have a chance. Gabe, here's one from the president, Andrew V. Kennedy, who, by the way, has a great soapbox coming up in regards to this man, Al Haymon, that he says, I'm not sure if Haymon's running a quote-unquote democracy, like some have said, but it seems like he's definitely holding back until NBC. Agree?
But, you know, I'm sorry. I totally just cut out. Hit me with that question again, Steve.
He says, I'm not sure if Haymon's running a democracy, like some have said, but it seems like he's definitely holding back until NBC.
Yeah.
Agree or disagree?
I absolutely agree with that. And, I was looking at your column about Haymon, which I really, really was impressed by, and that you're able to get that agreement. I found that fascinating, that someone would say that this thing would make Don King blush. And I wonder if it's just I think there's a lot more to it. You know, the last few years, boxing fans have really jumped one way or the other, right? Showtime started to make aggressive moves. Everybody loves aggression in boxing, so they thought, these guys must be winning. They're doing something. And now you have this year where it's like, what the hell is going on? And with this NBC thing looming, I think that's the most logical conclusion, is that they're waiting for the good fights. But the other possibility is that, well, if the networks keep paying for this, and you guys keep watching this, no matter what they serve you, then why would it change when it goes to a different network? Maybe it's going to be the same thing. I don't know. I mean, none of these guys are getting younger. I mean, he's got this big stable. It makes sense that they're all going to fight each other. That's what I hope. But, we'll see. I mean, to me, this just feels like contractual obligations. All these cards the last few weeks have felt like, got to get these guys a fight. Don't want to get anybody beat. Let's put them in these fights, and they've been to different degrees of action-oriented. But that's
what's interesting?
It's brutal.
Gabe, I've mentioned this before, and I might be repeating myself, but in the last, I'd say, 6 to 8 weeks, I've asked various people that work with Al Haymon, either as a trainer, co-manager, promoter, or the father, and I say to them, when is such and such fighting again? I'm trying to get information just to do my job on Lamont Peterson, Sean Porter, Danny Garcia, Adrian Broner, any of those upper-level Haymon guys that aren't named Floyd Mayweather. Nobody knows. I mean, these guys literally do not have an assignment. And Gabe, think about this. We are now just a few days from Christmas. We're going to flip to the new year, and look at what's going on between the two networks. HBO already has a pretty nice set of fights going all the way up to March 14th, right? So they have some shows planned, and you kind of know what they're doing for the first quarter or third of 2015. Showtime has January 17th, and what else? Does anyone know? Does anyone care?
Well, that is it. They've got January 17th. I mean, you know how much stuff gets lost between Christmas and New Year's and that whole black hole period? So you really – how much are they really going to be able to promote? A couple weeks for heavyweight title that – to answer Ernie's question or to get back into that of, can the U.S. heavyweights in the U.S. thrive? I mean, it kind of depends on who wins that fight and how. But 2 weeks to promote such a significant fight, I mean, it's like not only are they putting on bad fights, but when they have a really great, like, gem of a fight, a very special fight, they don't do anything with it. It seems
Dave,
strange.
You know what I've been told, though? I've been told this by several people in the know. Haymon doesn't give a damn. It's about the television money, and if people show up, they show up. But think about this. There used to be a rule all the way back when I was a young rookie on the beat. If you didn't announce a fight at the HBO Showtime pay-per-view level by 8 weeks or so at least, you wouldn't do the fight. You missed the deadline because you had to promote the thing, you had to market the thing, you had to sell tickets. This paradigm has been turned completely upside down by some of the powers that be, at least on that side of the street. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's get to the phone lines.
All right, then. In the 503, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, it's Tyler from Oregon. I have a couple questions. What do you think is more likely to happen? Kolev gets Stevenson, or Golovkin gets one of the middleweight or super middleweight title holders to fight him?
You know what? I'm going to go with Kovalev Stevenson, and I'll tell you why. The WBC last week at their convention ruled that the winner of the Pascal Kovalev fight, when they will become the mandatory in the WBC, which is the main belt held by Adonis Stevenson, and they will get a 50-50 split. And I'm just going to say this right now. If Stevenson then makes the conscious decision to turn down, let's say, Kovalev again twice, and then this time dump the belt, it'll be perhaps the all-time most egregious duck job in the history of boxing.
I would agree. I think Stevenson Kovalev has a better chance of happening. I think, you know, as much as everybody wants Golovkin to move up to super middleweight, they're staying pat at 160. They're building a foundation. They want to make this guy, you know, ultimately the middleweight champion of the world.
Yeah.
If they'd be able to say that while building a fan base and ratings base. So I think it's going to be, you know, I think Stevenson Kovalev, that would be the way to go.
Yeah, and by the way, the other issue is that, you know, Stevenson could keep saying, I'm the man at light heavyweight, but there's such a backlash, and this is what I've always said about those who want to do independent rankings and have one linear champion. I just think it's illogical in today's game. As fractured as it is, and as inactive as most fighters are, sorry, I'd rather have multiple belts that could actually create more fights. And to the credit of the sanctioning bodies, I think they're realizing that Al Haymon is bad for business. They're actually starting to act in a way at times to counteract Al Haymon by enforcing certain fights. And think about it. The only time Al Haymon fighters were in really good fights this year, no one else forced it but the sanctioning bodies. Just think about that.
Oh, it's a mandatory curse that he hasn't been able to break. You know, I mean, even they moved Danny Jacobs early to the title, and they put him in against, you know, Dmitry Pirog, and that was a WBO-forced fight. And look what happened. There's many examples of it. I think it's the sanctioning bodies. They've made some moves recently. You know, I think they're kind of realizing that they need to get a little more active in the sport if the sport is going to survive. Not just Al Haymon, but everything.
Tyler, anything else we can do for you?
Yeah, I have one more question. I was reading online and I saw this headline that Kevin Johnson placed a bet on his fight with Anthony Joshua. So I thought that sounded interesting. And I clicked on the link and it said that he placed like about $10,000 a bet for charity that Anthony Joshua wouldn't knock him out. Can that really be called like promoting at all? That doesn't seem like that's going to help like drive up any interest in that fight. I don't even know like why he said that.
Yeah, that's kind of strange. And by the way, there are certain jurisdictions that like Vegas, they don't want fighters betting on themselves in any way. I mean, the term that seems to come up is conflict of interest. I mean, let's say you're a fighter and you say, okay, the over-under is 8 rounds. Well, I'm going to take the over. Well, here's the thing. Are you really going to try to do anything for the first 7.5 rounds if you bet on yourself in any type of prop bet? My guess would be no.
Well, I heard that he bet with Anthony Joshua. Like, if he knocked him out, then he would give like $10,000 to his charity, and you know, vice versa. But I don't know. I just couldn't believe that. Like, came out as I thought. Like, if you're gonna bet on the fight, you bet on yourself. Like, if you're gonna throw a bet out there, you're gonna throw a bet out there that you're gonna win. I'm not gonna get knocked out.
Yeah. Well, Kevin Johnson fights in a way that he doesn't necessarily need to put money on himself to be safety first. Let's just put it that way. Anyway, thanks for the call. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
787. You're live on the next round.
Guys, do you hear me?
Yes. How can we not, Javier? Come on.
Just two quick things, guys. First of all, three things, to be honest. One of the Fighter of the Year candidates is Miguel Cotto, but he only fought once this year. Do you think that somebody has, in my opinion, somebody has to fight two or three times in order to win, even though I thought Cotto had a great win against Martinez? Do you guys agree with that?
I've said for a while that maybe there shouldn't even be a Fighter of the Year award anymore. guys aren't doing it enough. And I care about this stuff, which I really don't. I don't vote on any of it officially. I find myself reticent to vote for anyone that didn't fight at least three times a year, Gabe. That's just my personal philosophy.
Yeah, I think so. And I think I also, out of my fighter of the year, I want somebody that faced some sort of adversity, not just fought three times, you know, but fought significant fights, fought in fights that were supposed to be competitive, and then they won something. It's got to, you know, and hopefully all three of the fights were of that substance. Like Kovalev comes to mind as a candidate, but, you know, we expected him to beat Mike Caporello and Cedric Agnew, and we expected him to beat Bernard Hopkins. We were just, you know, we're always wary of picking against Hopkins because he's Hopkins, but that's kind of, it's, you know, beating Hopkins is no slouch, but it's kind of a weak resume. I kind of agree with Steve. You know, maybe you celebrate that guy when somebody has a breakout year.
And the other two things, guys. First of all, if Roc Nation does buy Gary Shaw, does that mean that that's another promoter that is not working with Al Heyman? So Heyman only works with Al Heyman and everybody else works at HBO. And the second question is, with all the Mayweather saga, whether are they going to make the fight or not, do you think that that has to lay the announcement regarding Cotto and Canelo and the chance that the fight happened on May 2nd?
You know, I don't know. That's interesting. I'll say one thing about Saul Alvarez. He seems to be a steadfast individual. He seems very hell-bent on making Cinco de Mayo his date, and I don't think he's moving off. But I only think there's one fight that could move off any Mayweather fight currently, and that is Canelo against Cotto. Now, unless the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight somehow comes to fruition, which I don't believe it will, I think there's going to be a standoff. I mean, Gabe, I don't know about you. It almost seems to me that the bigger issue now is who gets May 2nd instead of which fights actually get made. And I'm like, isn't that putting the cart before the horse?
Well, yeah. I mean, it makes me very curious as to why those times. Why does Floyd have to fight only that time? Is that when boxing fans randomly fly to Vegas, like during that time? Is it boxing season? Why those dates? It's interesting that, you know, a guy that's been paying USADA over and over again for the same windows of time to be tested within for the last few years is really particular about being knocked off his date, even though he doesn't have a fight that's as competitive as Cotto Canelo and is in the marketplace and in the ring. It's kind of interesting. Mm. Really wants those two windows of time.
Anyway, listen, Javier, we got to get going. You have yourself a good Christmas, okay?
Okay. You too, guys. Thank you very much.
You too.
If you want
to
call
in, to answer the question, no, Cotto shouldn't even be, in my opinion, a candidate for Fighter of the Year beating Sergio Martinez. So, sorry, Steve.
Yeah, you fought once against the ghost of a guy with no knees and one shoulder.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a great achievement, but it was also better matchmaking by everyone involved. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598 here for about another hour before Monday Night Football. Gabe, who's next?
Let's see. In the 860, CT, you're live on the next round.
What's up, guys? How you doing tonight?
Good. What's going on,
doing
CT?
Well, man.
I just want to talk about Adonis Stevenson. He's got to be by far one of the most one-dimensional fighters, champions that I've ever seen. I mean, he's got that style. He became champion by using that style. I think what he does well by doing it. But I just can't see how these fighters that he is fighting, can't see that he's all left-handed. They don't circle to his right and try to get like a better game plan and get his one-dimensional type arsenal. What do you guys think about? I mean, I think if he fights Kovalev, he presents some trouble because he can punch very fast with that left hand. He hits very hard. He can punch going off the back foot. I mean, like I was saying, when he does well, but I think somebody like Kovalev will pick up every time he tries to do that and beat him easily.
CT, I'm still of the belief, and I know there's such a deep backlash against Superman Stevenson, and I understand that completely. But I still want to see Kovalev-Stevenson. I think that fight should still happen. I think it would be very exciting. And you say that he's one-dimensional. I don't disagree, CT, but it's the greatest dimension to have if you're one-dimensional as far as I'm concerned. That's the eraser. And is it out of the realm of possibility that he could run Kovalev into something and completely change our minds about him? No, and that's still why I have a great intrigue over that potential matchup.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, I think, you know, his front side offense isn't the greatest. He doesn't like to lead Stevenson. I think that was the big problem, was he had a guy in front of him that wasn't going to lead and was going to be kind of reluctant. And so he's just looking at, you know, for his spots, just trying to make something happen. It was a lot of what Julian Williams' problem was this weekend, was the dude he was facing was just like, he refused to give punches away. I mean, he just, nothing. And so you have to create that. It's kind of dangerous. And when he's facing Kovalev, who's an offensive fighter, there's going to be a lot more opportunities to counter. I think Stevenson might be more comfortable in that fight, even though it's much more dangerous, just because he's going to get what he needs in that fight. I want to see that fight.
Yeah, I definitely agree on that, because like you guys said, Kovalev is definitely more offensively minded. And I also know because Hopkins, how he can adjust his range, and like you did against Hopkins, take some steps back. So I think he's going to throw like a lot of feints versus Stevenson, and he's going to get Stevenson a little bit worried about, you know, a little bit confused about his style as well, as far as like Kovalev can also step back a little bit and engage range and time Stevenson with a punch. I think it's going to be a great fight if they do fight, because they're both tremendous punchers.
CT, let me ask you this, and I brought this up earlier. Who in your mind is a light heavyweight champion of the CT Association of Boxing?
Kovalev.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Definitely Kovalev.
Interesting. CT, you have a great Christmas, okay?
Thank you. You too.
All right. That was CT joining us as always. Again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or comment, you could do so at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, who's next?
In six, actually, they'll go up here to the 530. You're live on the next round.
Good evening, Bye. Steve and Gabriel. It's Ringside Robert here. And first of all, Terrence Crawford, in my opinion, is Fighter of the Year. He fought three good fights, won them all convincingly. And I totally agree with your assessment. You have to fight at least three times a year and look impressive doing it. And Stevenson has to fight Cotto. But the thing that really bothers me is, you know, I thought Al Haymon would be a good thing for boxing when he first burst on the scene a couple of years ago. But now I've totally flipped the script. I think he's one of the worst things to ever happen to boxing because he's protecting his fighters. I mean, let's take a guy like Peter Quillen, for example. He basically gave up $1.4 million not to fight Matt Kovalev or Korobov.
Korobov.
And we all seen what Andy Lee was able to do to Korobov. If I'm Peter Quillen, I probably look like a complete fool now, because he could have very easily went in the ring and done something like that to that guy. I mean, a guy like Al Haymon is just horrible for our sport, Steve. That's just the way I see it.
You know, I just remember 2-3 years ago, it was Blame Bob and everyone should side with Al Haymon. That goes right up
yep.
there in the graveyard of stupid things boxing fans used to say. Right next to, remember this one, Gabe? Boxing needs Dana White. Okay.
Oh, God. God. Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting, you know, like, I got criticized by our good friend Ramon for writing that article back when we were at Max Boxing, the interview with Dana White. It was, you know, boxing has nothing on Dana White. And it doesn't, because he's getting sued, you know, by his athletes in a major class action lawsuit for all kinds of offenses. I mean, he's thought of ways to screw fighters Don King could only dream of, allegedly. It's, you know, I think Al, you know, I don't go into much for trophy hunting. So, I'm not going to blame all of boxing's ills on Al, because the main thing I blame him for is how boring he's made it, how non-competitive it's become.
And Gabe,
you know,
Gabe, how about this fact? Someone's got to enable him, right?
Yes.
I mean, it all began with Seth Abraham, apologies to Seth Abraham, who did a great job running HBO Sports. It all started with the laziness of Ross Greenberg and the actions of Kerry Davis to let him invade HBO, and it's carried on at Showtime. This has not been a one-man operation, Gabe. That's where I completely agree with you. It's not just him. This is a systemic breakdown.
Yeah,
well,
I think
one of the reasons why everybody thinks it's him, Steve, is because all the fighters sign contracts with him, so he's the one that everybody blames. But you're absolutely right. The networks are to blame at this. And who's to say that NBC, when they start their deal, whether it's February or March or whatever, who's to say the NBC deal won't be more of the same?
Right. Yeah, at the end of the day, this is Missouri. Show me. You make good fights, we're good. I'm okay with Al Haymon. But I don't want to hear fans say, well, he's making his guys a lot of money. Listen, you jerk job. Unless you're getting a percentage of it, do you celebrate what Kobe Bryant makes? No. So I just find it distressing that so many fans now, as Doug Fisher once said about a lot of Mayweather fans, you're not his financial advisor. You don't get a piece of the action. I mean, what are you a fan of? Are you a fan of other people's money? Or actually a fan of boxing? And Robbie, you're a fan of boxing, and when the product has been what it has been like, especially this year on Showtime, it is distressing.
Very much so. I mean, I'm already looking forward to Steve the HBO schedule, because they're putting together a good schedule so far. I mean, you've got Rios Alvarado, you've got Golovkin Martin Murray, you've got
Pascal Kovalev.
Yeah, you've got Pascal Kovalev, and I don't know if Jennings and Klitschko are officially signed yet, but that's going to be on HBO when they do get that signed. I mean, HBO is already well ahead of Showtime. Showtime, other than having Showbox on January 9th, the only other thing they have is January 17th, and that's not much to hold your hat on.
And by the way, January 17th, the WBC mandated that fight, so I guess the hashtag should be thanks Suleiman.
Exactly.
Anyway, wow. Robbie, we got to get going, okay?
All right. Merry Christmas to both of you.
Oh, thank you.
Too.
And thank you for calling in, as always, Robbie. Gabe, who's next on deck here?
In the 585. You are live on the next round.
Hey, guys. 585.
Yep.
Hey, guys. This is Jake from Rochester.
Jake from State Farm. I bet you look hideous. What's going on?
I'm ruggedly handsome, Steve.
What's going on?
I liked your article on Al Haymon. Was it today that it came out? But I read it today anyway. But it was, unlike Fox News, pretty fair and balanced.
What I do.
No, I said it was unlike Fox News, and it was fair
okay.
And balanced. But it was good. But I just don't buy what Julian Williams is saying about being able to just choose your own path with Haymon. I mean, Daniel Garcia interviews post fight has looked openly distressed, you know, with Al Haymon. I mean, hinting at problems with their relationship.
Well, here's what I found interesting, Jake. Two issues with your comment. I think if you really want to force people to fight or have your manager do what you want, I think you have the power to do that. But when you're being paid so well, sometimes you just go along with the flow. But the other thing was, you talk about Danny Garcia. You know where I knew the Salka fight was really bad and a gross mismatch? I mean, outside the actual fight. After the fight, Jake, if you go back to it, look at the guilty look on Angel Garcia's face. That, to me, was very telling. That there's a shameless individual who's actually ashamed of just what they just did to Rod Salka.
Yeah, I mean, I think
also.
Oh,
sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Move on.
I was just going to say, with Keith Thurman. Keith Thurman has said in interviews that he would be open to signing with a promoter. He even said he would sign with Top Rank, of all people. So I don't know. It just seems like Thurman wants to get on the action, but as you've said in the past, Steve, Al Haymon has other irons in the fire.
And another thing, and there was a time frame when Keith Thurman was like this renegade. He seems to be falling in line now. I mean, he just reportedly turned down a 3-fight, $6 million deal. with Roc Nation. I mean, that's a lot of money. And one other point I want to bring up, Jake, I mean, I remember the last time I interviewed Leo Santa Cruz. Now, this is on camera. This is before the Mayweather undercard, which he was a part of, I believe. I mean, it was such a forgettable night. I've kind of forgotten about it. Leo Santa Cruz actually used the phrase, you know, I'm just going to keep obeying Al Haymon. Just think about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's – I think – What's that? I think looking at the careers of the fighters, I mean, it seemed, and maybe I was wrong before, but it seemed like the sport on some level could be driven by what a fighter wanted, particularly when he got to a certain level. I don't understand, unless Quillen's making more money next year than he would have in that fight, I don't see that that's a good business move, and I don't see how a title holder, who is actually usually in good fights, not fighting, not defending that belt, is good for the sport.
Well, Quillen has gone off the deep end. I mean, he's actually saying stuff to our friend at The Boxing Voice that I'm turning down more money than Golovkin's ever made. And somehow that's a badge of honor. I mean, Quillen, from what I understand, has never made more than $450, which is certainly a good payday. But he turns down $1.4 for Khorabov, and he says, well, that's more money than Golovkin's ever made. Someone needs to tell Peter there's no honor in turning down a fight for that much money and then using that as a point of reference against any other fighter. And I'm telling you what happens psychologically to fighters. When you make things too easy on them, you can dull their competitive spirit. And I'm telling you, there's a reason why Haymon guys, almost across the board, the ones with the real sense of entitlement that say some really bizarre, strange things, they're usually with Haymon. Just saying.
Yeah, I'd also like to get your take on, you know, Showtime 2015. We've already gotten a peek at what possibly, a hint anyway, is what may be business as usual over at Showtime. Haymon with the rumored Stevenson from Fera 2 for spring in Quebec City. Given what we saw in 2014, if we see the same pattern in 2015, do you think Espinoza survives the year at Showtime?
Yeah, I was told he's got a contract extension. I don't know if his job's at stake. I really don't know. So, you know, listen.
Kerry Davis kept his job for a long time.
Yes, he did, Gabe. Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Jake, we got to get running, okay?
Thanks.
You have a good Christmas. If you want to call in, we are halfway done here. 347-215-7598. At the top of the hour, we'll go through some news and notes and some fight reviews. Gabe, let's go back to the phone lines.
I don't have friends at the Boxing Voice. 707, you're live on the next round. 707.
Hey, what's up, fellas? It's Carl.
Carl,
hey,
how have you been?
Man, I've been at work, man.
You haven't missed much.
I know, man. I'm waiting for this college playoff, man. I'm so uninterested in boxing.
Carl, what's the last fight you watched with interest?
I like that Marquez Alvarado. That's probably the last one that I saw that I was really interested in. I thought that was a real good fight.
Interesting.
You know, everything
okay,
else.
Because that was six
garbage.
Months ago. Just think about that, Carl. That fight took place, I believe, on May 17th. Now, I will say this. I think HBO, I thought, really did not have a very good first half of the year for the most part. But you know, people have asked me on various shows who had the better year, HBO or Showtime. Just judging off the last 4 months, I thought HBO had a much better finish to 2014 than their counterparts.
Yeah, I think so too. Actually, I checked out those fights last weekend, the Showtime card and the HBO card. I thought that Bradley he won that 8-4 easy. It was a tough fight though, but he pulled that out. And I checked out the Showtime stuff, man, and you know, I wasn't you. What excited me most about the Showtime card, man, I like what Earl Spence did on Showtime Stream. Other than that, I didn't like any of those other fights.
Can I just say something, Gabe? It's an indictment on your Showtime broadcast if something on Showtime Extreme overshadows it to anybody.
Well, it is extreme. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's really – well, sometimes the undercard, those guys are still hungry. You know, the guy that – I mean, watching Gary Russell and Chris Martin today was just like it was just repetitive. It was like watching a sparring session that wasn't very exciting. It was just a one-sided fight. And the quote at the end of it was like, as expected, Gary Russell is the victor. You know, it was like, no question of the outcome was the quote after the scores were announced for that fight. That should be the slogan for Al Heyman Boxing, no question of the outcome.
You know, Gary Russell's another guy that said something, and I've been a fan of Gary Russell. I still think he can win a title or two. I think he's very talented. But when he makes quotes where he says, I would beat Vasyl Lomachenko 99 out of 100 times. Excuse me while my slanted eyes roll, okay, guys?
He spotted him one? He spotted him the first one.
Yeah, I don't. You know what? They could fight 100 times, man. The same thing would happen over and over, man. I just don't. I don't see it, man.
Carl, anything else we could do for you?
Man, who do you like, man? Florida State and Oregon, man.
Oh, you know what? I am not the biggest Oregon fan, but I do think geography plays a difference. This game's on the West Coast. And I think finally someone is going to be good enough and push the pace for all 60 minutes. I think Jameis Winston's career comes to an end in the semifinal game, Carl. That's my prediction.
Man, I think so too, man. You guys have a Merry Christmas now.
Absolutely, Carl. Thank you for joining us, and have a great new year. Gabe, who's next on the phone line?
In the 510. You're live on the next round. 510. 510. Boom. Wouldn't be Christmas if there wasn't a knockdown. And the 647. You're live on the next round. 647.
I hear some scribbling.
I do. Bad connection. Sorry. Move up to the 347. You're live on the next round. Nope.
More scratching.
All right, well, yeah, that's, I don't know. That's me scratching off the number. yeah, so I guess we'll hit to the news and notes. I'm running out of phone numbers here.
All right, if you want to call in, 347. All right, just try one more.
Well, yeah, this guy's been on for a while. 682, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys.
Yes, who is this?
This is Enrique. I just wanted to say Felix Verdejo's mom makes the best chicken soup. Guys, I love Felix Verdejo. He's the blue to my red on the Puerto Rican flag.
I think we just got cold a little bit there. But
No. Hold on. I'm told that Verdejo's mom does make a good bowl of chicken soup, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've got good sources up there on the island, Gabe. You don't know how deep my network really runs. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you could do so at SteveUCNLive or at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, let's get to some news and notes here. Andy Ruiz, here's a guy I think has more natural talent than Chris Areola. You know what the problem is? I think he has even less discipline. He came in at 267.5 and actually struggled with Sergey Lyakovich. That's an indictment, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's actually a conviction. I'm not sure. I mean, it just seems to me that I don't know, does he not care? I mean, because for one, I'm like, why is Sergey Lyakovich fighting? He hasn't looked good in a long time, suffered a really scary knockout against Deontay Wilder in one round. And we were all kind of like looking at that going, dude, I don't want to see that guy ever again, you know, in a ring. And here he is. He goes from California, moves over to another jurisdiction, heads over to Arizona, and he's got two fights. And now he's in this one. And Andy couldn't do anything with him. I mean, he won the fight, but when you come in 267, I mean, he could lose a large dog and still have weight to lose. How much? That's the thing, is I wonder, what is his ideal goal weight? What does Andy Ruiz look like when he's in the best shape that he could possibly be? 220? 215?
Here is a tweet from A. Flores. Andy Ruiz is the lovable fat guy. No longer cute. Dude has to train. I've been told, because he used to be a wild card. I used to see him a lot over there in Hollywood. He's now in Las Vegas. Gabe, I've heard Las Vegas is not good for Andy Ruiz. And the bottom line is, this is some of the things I've found to be interesting. Some of the brass at Top Rank, they were starting to utter stuff like, well, certain guys are just better, bigger, he's never going to be cut up. Certain guys don't need to train as much, or they're better and when they're heavier at a certain weight. Gabe, that reeks of enabling. It really does.
Yeah.
That just reeks of enabling. It's the same type of malarkey I heard for James Toney, what you hear for Chavez. Adults need to be in charge here and tell this guy, listen, either you take this seriously, but we are not going to be embarrassed. If I'm Top Rank and I have any say left, I say, number one, you get out of Vegas. Number two, you get a real trainer. And number three, you get a dietitian. And number four, until you could tip the scales around mid-240s, we're shelving you. That simple.
Yeah. I don't understand why that isn't, being said to him. Vegas, I've never understood. I mean, it's closer to where the big fights are, but it's not a town where it's the opposite of Big Bear. You know, it's not isolation. It's every temptation is there. All kinds of hustlers and all kinds of things are there in a very compact area. The fighters, you only train, what, four hours out of your day. If you're in the gym, an hour and a half, 2 hours, and you go do your running thing, and then an hour for, travel or just kind of rest in between. The rest of your day, you're just recovering from that, waiting to train again, and getting into trouble a lot of the time, especially if you're in a town like Vegas. Andy used to be very dedicated. I remember we both saw him at the wild card come up, and at first he was there at nights when he was just an amateur trying to work his way towards getting down to a certain weight and then competing and then moving on to being a pro. And he was hungry, and that's a hungry room, particularly at night. And I don't know where that's gone, but he's hungry, just the wrong kind.
Gabe, when he struggled last year against Tor Hammer on the Pacquiao Rios undercard, I remember being told by people at Top Rank, until he loses weight, we're shelving him. We're not putting up with this. We're going to discipline, and things have gotten worse. And the shame of it all is that Andy Ruiz has natural tools. He has natural combinations. He's very smooth, knows how to relax in the ring. And I understand, is he ever going to have the body of Tim Bradley? No. But he's not anywhere near optimal physical conditioning, and having a grand piano on your back or around your stomach, I'm sorry, that doesn't aid the cause as it relates to professional prize fighting. Gabe, this was announced last week on Boxing Scene, January 24th, underneath Rios Alvarado 3. Gilberto Ramirez will be taking on Maxim Vlasov. Gabe, I want to see what Zerto Ramirez has. He's promotable. He's got the look. He's Mexican. Now we got to find out, starting, I think, with this fight, does he have the right stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. And Dave Duenas actually just mentioned that I guess Andy's going to be on Wednesday broadcast of Leave It in the Ring with Dave. This is going to be a fight, Gilberto Ramirez-Sanchez versus Maxim Vlasov. Yeah, I think we're going to find out a lot about him. Vlasov is not an older guy. He's 28. He's only had one loss, and it wasn't by knockout. I believe it was kind of earlier. It was a few years ago. It was kind of middle of his career, and he's been on a nice streak since. I like Ramirez. I think he's an action guy, but you're right. I want to see the depth now. I want to see him face adversity, somebody that's there to win and that has a chance to win. This is that fight. This is a nice step.
And what I'm being told, Gabe, Brian Valoria might have a rematch with Juan Francisco Estrada sometime in the spring. This fight could be on HBO Latino. Gabe, here's what I think is a perfect scenario. Me and you are hardcore fans, and so are obviously guys like Cliff Rold. But instead of watching Kareem Mayfield and guys like that on the opening bouts of HBO, I think the time has long come that we start showing some of the smaller guys. And I would love to see the Valoria Estrada rematch winner, should this come to fruition, face Roman Gonzalez on HBO. I think that is a dream scenario for 2015.
I agree with you. You know, it doesn't have to be. There may not be that many guys in one division that can, you know, lead towards exciting fights. Like, you know, I don't want to see a ton of also rans. That's why I feel a lot of these Heyman cards too. Signs up a lot of guys, and I end up seeing. Why do I keep seeing Badu Jack? He's not that good. I don't need him to take that many TV slots. I think going to the little guys, going to the other divisions, why not see the cream of the crop from each division as much as you can, as long as it's a friendly TV style, you know, give me more of that.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you could do so at SteveUCNLive or at Gabriel_Montoya. And I think that's one of the keys. I mean, there used to be this perception that you couldn't sell the small guys in America, that's an Asian market, that's something with Latin America. That may be true, but I think it's changing with our population, our geographic shift, and all that other stuff. And now that the game, where so much streaming, people trade DVDs, I don't think there's a lot of mysteries in the world. If you're a hardcore boxing fan, Gabe, that subscribes to HBO or Showtime specifically for boxing, or that's at least half the reason why you pay that extra $20 to $25 every month. Gabe, you know who Roman Gonzalez is.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think, you know, the whole model is going to be changing within the next year or so. HBO recently announced they're going to go to streaming and kind of doing, rather than having to buy all the channels, you'll be able to buy HBO, from what it sounds like, right there just on the web and stream it on the web. Now, most people stream it a different way on the web already, but this will be obviously HD and, you know, a clear version. You're not all shaky worrying about pop-ups and all the piracy things that you normally would listening to on the radio. But what I'm wondering, too, is that if it's timely and it isn't the kind of HBO streaming where, say, they don't put Game of Thrones on there until, you know, after, like, a few episodes have aired, and so you're not always up to date. But if it's, like, live, that could change things, because then they could start showing fights and fight fans could plug right in for, say, $18 a month and just have, you know, they could just pick up and watch their fights and as a one-off. That's going to change the game. And I wonder if it's going to change the game going forward and how the networks purchase their fights, and maybe that opens up the variety, hopefully.
You know what I find interesting is I was given some ratings. Out of the top 15 shows unboxing this year in the United States, 13 of them were on HBO. Now, everyone's going to say, okay, but HBO's in more homes. They are. But, Gabe, just a year or two ago, Showtime had some highly rated shows that were surpassing HBO. So I don't think there's any doubt that the public is now really – I don't know if they're rebelling, but there certainly is a backlash over what is going on at Showtime this year. I mean, Gabe, August 9th to me was an embarrassment. But – and again, I know I'm in the minority because I think Peterson Garcia is a hell of a fight, and I want to see it. Those guys have not fought each other, and I think they should. But, Gabe, if they don't even fight each other now, and there's no guarantee that fight's going to happen, what was the point of that night? I mean, seriously,
you know,
from our standpoint, I mean, we're not getting any money. We just want to watch fights, and we understand you have to marinate fights, you have to have prelude matches, but we're not going to even get the payoff.
Right. So, I mean, there's no rhyme or reason. It's you know, it's just kind of like – it's almost like Hollywood. Like the consumer's not even really part of the process, and now they've even stopped worrying about, you know, if we're going to like this or not. They're just throwing things at us and expecting us to buy it. And it's interesting you ask, like, do the numbers, is that a rebellion? I don't think it's a full rebellion in that. I think the numbers would be much lower if people were consciously doing this. But I think on some level, you know, boxing fans are talking to each other much more than they ever were. I mean, I
think
in the early days of, you know, Max Boxing, the forums were strong, like Doghouse Boxing still has a strong forum. There's several of them out there. But now there's sub-forums within Facebook. I mean, there's tons. You just type in boxing in the search engine and all these different forums come up. And all of those people share links to free viewings of it, streaming it on the web to varying degrees of quality. And I think that absolutely cuts into it. And I wonder, because there's another thing that HBO's doing. I think CBS and a few other networks do this. They're not going to start releasing their ratings until 2 weeks after the event has happened, so that they can factor in all the DVR, all the other ways that, you know, and especially this new streaming thing that people have been watching. And it can be, I think, one of the metrics they were saying, it could sit like jump from like 3 million viewers up to like 18 billion, just measuring all these different things. So it can be a significant shift. I know they're not driven by ratings, but, you know, when they're selling off other assets, and maybe fights will be a part of that, ratings do count when they're trying to sell them to things like Amazon and Hulu and other outlets. So, again, I think the paradigm is shifting, and I wonder, you know, when we hear about what Al's going to do with that, his own streaming service, and that's where he's headed, try to compete with HBO, who's getting in the same business.
Gabe, you know where I think there has been a rebellion? Pay-per-view. If you look at the last, say, 3-4 shows, the numbers in terms of the projections, what was expected from the various shows, have been subpar. And I remember writing about this right around the same time this year or last year for Sports on Earth, where I said, we have a problem here. In the first 7 months or the 6 months of 2014, there's about 5 or 6 shows already lined up on pay-per-view, and half of them don't have an opponent. In other words, it was Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao versus Tom Bob Anderson. And I think there's a glut. I absolutely believe that with pay-per-view, there's been a saturation point in terms of that.
No
and then looking ahead to next year, the only fight I really think that, hey, I want to watch it on pay-per-view, it's not Mayweather versus whoever or Pacquiao versus whoever. It's Canelo and Cotto, and everything else, in my opinion, in a perfect world, which we certainly don't live in, should be on HBO or Showtime. But I mean, do we have enough big fights nowadays to support 7 or 8 pay-per-view shows a year? Probably not. Anyway, if you want to join us, I think Gabe has been knocked off here. Again, that number. Gabe, are you there?
I was making a hell of a point while I accidentally hit the mute button with my thumb. No, I agree with you. I think the market's been absolutely glutted. And when you look at it, all the pay-per-views that are happening, I just don't see, like you said, Cotto Canelo is the clear pay-per-view next year. There's no question about that. But with everybody that Pacquiao has available to him, can you think of anybody that you want to see him face in that available universe that you'd want to pay pay-per-view prices for, besides Mayweather? He's not available.
Yeah, it's so funny because now I think the battle over the date is almost like they're looking for a certain insurance, like, hey, people will buy pay-per-views on this date. When it's all said and done, Gabe,
yeah,
it's about the fight. You better have a matchup. I just think when you start relying on a date to insulate yourself from a pay-per-view decline, I say to myself, I don't know if we're doing it the right way. You know, I don't know. I think Showtime is under a lot of pressure next year because they had a horrific 2014. I mean, think about it. Camagay Guerrero was not supposed to be this great fight. They hit lightning in a bottle with a fight that I kind of like going in, Molina Matisse. So, okay, those are 2 good fights. Gabe, what else did they have this year? Really? Emmanuel Taylor Broner, maybe?
Oof. And see, I mean, when you lower expectations like that, you lower standards like that for what the audience, they get excited. It's like when Tom Cruise doesn't sound like he's reading, people think he's actually sounds like a good actor. No, he just doesn't sound like reading. So, you know, that fight wasn't that great. It wasn't that memorable, but it was a good, solid fight. It would have been a solid undercard fight in Vegas, you know, but it's not like main event material to me. I don't get excited by it. Thinking about it, I'll never watch it again. You know? Yeah. I don't I don't understand it. But it's here's the thing. When you look at it and you go, Espinosa's going to keep his job? And, you know, is any of this going to change? I wonder if any of it – I think he will keep his job, and I wonder if any of it will change because Hollywood never really changes. Like, no, entertainment doesn't drastically go, you know what, really sucking right now. Let's just up the quality. It's kind of rare. So I don't know. I'm really curious about 2015.
347-215-7598. Gabe, I understand we have a call. Let's get to it.
All right. And the 516, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Evan from Pennsylvania. How you guys doing?
Good. What's going on,
what's
Evan?
Going on?
Well, my name doesn't start with an R, so I can't have a fancy name like Ringside, but I'll do my best.
Electric Edwin from Pennsylvania.
Well, I was watching the one of the Heyman specials this weekend, and the Vizier JoJo Dan fight. And going into the fight, you know, with all the rash of bad decisions, I said, you know, I'm kind of worried that that if Dan wins the fight, he's going to get robbed, and they're going to give the Vizier. But during the introductions, I saw one of the Watson sons in the corner of JoJo Dan, and then when the fight was over, I said, well, if it's a close decision, they're going to give it, not give it, but JoJo Dan's going to get the decision. And lo and behold, the Heyman fighter won the close decisions. It goes to show you that even though he was essentially the road fighter, you get that Heyman backing. Seems to do wonders with the judges, doesn't it?
It does. But in all fairness, though, I do think Dan, after that seventh round knockdown, I thought he rallied to win a close decision, though. I will say that. I actually agreed with that verdict.
Oh, so did I. But I think in, you know, my cynical view of it, is if, you know, Dan, you know, if it was sort of, if Dan didn't have the Heyman backing and that sort of close fight where there's a lot of close rounds, most of the time, I'd say 8 or 9 or 10 times, that does go to the local fighter, which was Vizier. And I just, I always find it interesting when, you know, when you have certain, you know, certain management and certain representation, you know, the hometown advantage doesn't seem to carry as much weight as it usually does.
So in other words, having the Watsons in your corner, it's like Allstate. You're in good hands.
But I just wanted a quick story. And I, you know, I was at the Cosmopolitan show the other week in Las Vegas, and afterwards I had to, meet my brother down at the other side of the strip. And after that card, it was about a 2 mile walk, and I was pissed. I was just, you know, I think I was like a lot of boxing fans. I just was sort of walking in a huff the 2 miles, and I'm just like, why in the world do I spend my good money supporting this sport? And you know, I know you had Mauricio Herrera on last week, and I just felt for a guy like Herrera who, you know, early in his career got a couple, controversial decisions, but he's more than made up for it, and I think he's turning into the Mexican Glenn Johnson. That's what I think.
That's a great comparison. And Gabe, how much did it not surprise you that Bob Bennett, who took over for Keith Kaiser, he backs the decisions of his judges? I mean, that's the least surprising thing of 2014, isn't it?
Oh, you know, more things change, more they stay the same. You know, it's all political. You know, it's all friendly and all good, and you know, it's. In the grand scheme for these guys, you know, I was thinking about this today. It's just, it all just keeps rolling. You know, I mean, when I first came into boxing, literally my first live card as a reporter, there was James Kirkland on undercard kind of fighting his way back, you know, towards getting to a showbox date. And now he's, you know, past 30 and kind of in Bolivian and with a weird career, but the sport rolls on. I'm sitting there watching Julian, you know, J-Rock Williams, young guy, developing, coming up. The sport just keeps rolling. And so for these guys, you know, a bad decision here or there in the grand scheme of things, what does it really matter? Everybody got paid, right? And then they just move on.
Eric, I got to ask you this. As someone who watches all the boxing at a certain level, do you find yourself going to a Showtime card like this past weekend is almost a chore nowadays?
I find myself DVRing a lot more shows and watching them live, and I find myself when DVRing, I find myself fast forwarding through a lot more fights than I ever have. I don't think it's because my interest in boxing has waned. I think it's because I don't, you know, I watch two rounds of the Darrell Edwards fight and I go, okay, this is he's either going to stop him, he's going to stop him in the 10th or 11th, or he's going to win 120-108, and he won 120-108 or whatever
yeah.
it was. And why the hell do I need to watch 10 rounds of Andre Darrell you know, pecking at a 37-year-old Derek Edwards. I have better things to do with my life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Eric, listen, you have a great Christmas, okay?
You too, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you. 347-215-7598. Gabe, I understand we have another call on the line.
The 347, you're live on the next round. 347.
Yeah, hey, Gabe. Hey, Steve. Happy holidays. How's it going?
Good, Amilcar. What's going on?
What's up,
not
man?
Not much. I did have a question in terms of the pay-per-view market. Mayweather, when he was announcing that he was interested in fighting Pacquiao, was almost starting to negotiate the reasons why Manny wouldn't deserve an X amount of money. Now, I understand that the pay-per-view numbers have dipped a bit in the U.S., especially as Manny is concerned, and maybe even with Mayweather, we don't really know. But what about the overseas market? Does that not carry any weight in terms of Manny Pacquiao's kind of marketability or popularity in the world? Because my understanding, just from traveling in other countries, is that abroad, Manny Pacquiao is probably the more popular of the two. What do you guys think?
I think that's a factor, but again, I don't know how you would quantify that without knowing what all the foreign markets are paying us. A lot of these countries don't pay all that much. And let's face it, the bulk of the money, as it relates to this fight, is in the pay-per-view market in the U.S.
Right. Right. Not so much, obviously, in China or in Japan or in the other countries where Pacquiao is a star.
Right.
Yeah, interesting. All right. Well, I really was just listening to the show. That question was on my mind for a bit, so I figured I'd ask. You guys have a good holidays, and I'll tune in next week if you have a show next week.
Yes, we will. Year-end special. Absolutely, Milko. You have a great Christmas.
Cool. You too. Take care.
Gabe,
right,
if
thanks.
This fight is not made for the first half of 2015, should again, and I've said this for a while, should they put it to bed forever, like bury it, throw the dirt on it, get the steamroller, and like pour concrete over it, and then throw that part of the land into the Atlantic Ocean for
yes,
good?
While setting it all on fire. Yeah, the whole thing. Well, I mean, they won't, you know, but I think, you know, I look at the sport, and there's so many things that, like boxing fans, they get excited when people make more money, as if that somehow improved the sport. That improved one guy's life, maybe a stable's lives, but it doesn't change the sport, really. It actually makes it harder for everybody else to get things done when it's not really done in a concerted effort. I think, you know, and so when I look at, like, the ink that fight takes up and the efforts and the hits and all that, and then also it's kind of like a giant sign that says our sport is completely dysfunctional. The greatest fight out there can't be made. And we keep broadcasting that to the world. As if that one fight, when it does happen, it's going to be like Oscar and Floyd. No one fight changes the sport. It's just going to make a lot of money. But I look at that and all the stories and all the things that they need to get focused on. It's really depressing. There's so much more to this sport than just that one fight. So many more stories to tell. So many more things to take care of. But, you know, everybody wants to talk about that because it's about hits. Unless somebody got injured or something, and then it's about that. You know, that does good traffic too.
I still remember in 2007, a week or two before that fight, Sports Illustrated ran this full cover piece, glossy, "The Fight to Save Boxing." And I just said, first of all, this fight's going to be a dud because of who's involved in it, and it'll do great business. And I think Larry Merchant said it best, though, a couple of years ago in the aftermath of the Tim Bradley Pacquiao decision. He said, "Ain't nothing going to kill it. Ain't nothing going to save it." It really is that simple.
It really is. Larry just speaks the truth. You know, I mean, I just think people just obsess on it. And I understand people want to see it. But for me, the fight ended when Pacquiao hit the canvas. But even before that, I think they were never going to be. Pacquiao was already a guy with a lot of miles on him. Floyd was getting on in years. He's kind of past the point where he's become a combination fighter, maybe one or two punches and he holds or moves. The fight was great back then in 2010, late 2009, early 2010. That's when it was like a zeitgeist. Like, it had everybody, accountant, you know, asking me, women at the, you know, hotel desk asking me, the girls that worked there. One was kind of a boxing fan, but more was like, you know, a popularity fan, knew what was hip. And that fight was hip then. That little smoke shop on Sunset that a lot of fighters go through, James Toney apparently went through there, and I don't know if, I think he paid for his cigars or not, but a bunch of these Jab Judah, Mike Tyson used to go through there. And I don't want to out the guy, but I think that was the spot that like he owed something for cigars. But you know, those guys were asking me about it. I remember when the fight finally fell apart, I think it wasn't even the second negotiations. It was the first one. And it was a real backlash of, like, I don't want to hear from those guys anymore. They can't get it together. This is ridiculous. How could they get us that excited and then not do it? For me, the fight will always be dead, even if it happens.
We have one more call, and we'll wrap it up here. Gabe, let's get to it.
All right. Let's see. 650, you're live on the next round. 650?
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon, fellas. This is Jeff from the Bay Area.
Jeff, what's going on?
Hey, I just bought my tickets to the Stubborn Wilder fight. Can't wait. I'm looking forward to it.
Nice.
Yeah. Question for you guys is, you know, I seen the Ruiz fight this weekend, and I was disappointed, to say the least, you know, in his performance. And, yeah, he does have to lose weight. But if you guys had $500, disposable cash, I came up to you and I gave you $500 and say, put your, and you can bet on Stubborn or Wilder. Gabe, who would it be? Steve, who would it be? Who would you bet on?
I think I would bet on Stubborn, strangely enough. I'm probably going to lean towards picking Wilder, but like right at this moment, I like Stubborn. I think he's steadier. I think he's a little more proven, a lot more proven. I wonder about, you know, if the fight gets in late and he hasn't gotten Wilder out of there, what the second half's going to look like. Is Wilder going to just show everything that he's got and find his rhythm and be this great big boxing machine? But I if I had to bet $500 right now, I'd bet it on Stubborn.
I like Stubborn, and I think seasoning and I think overall technique. And again, Gabe, I know we've talked about this before, but I still remember Deontay Wilder getting buzzed hard by Harold Scanyers. And I think Wilder has incredible natural punching power. You cannot teach that. But Stubborn is a tricky, fast, compact little puncher. And I think that he's going to find a way to slip some of those punches, deflect them, parry them. And I still look at Wilder, even with the amount of fights he's had, as still being a bit of an unfinished product who may have never had a great chin to begin with. So with that $500, Jeff, I would put it on Stubborn.
I'm doing it, you guys. I'm doing
it.
Hey, are you, Steve, are you going to be there for that fight?
I may or may not be. I'm a game time decision. I'm not sure about that.
Now, here's the thing. There's one more factor. If it goes to the decision, one guy's with Don King, and that may not have the same run that it used to, or it may have some old school run. I don't know. But the other guy's with Al Haymon, you know, Wilder. So take the politics into account as well. It's in Vegas at the MGM Grand, which is a very Haymon-esque kind of place. So just be careful with that $500 because
you know what's going to happen, don't you? Stubborn knocks Wilder out sixth round. You heard it here first.
Wow, and you're going to be $500 richer for it,
I like it.
Much more than that. Vegas odds already has Stubborn up.
Really? What's the number on that?
You know, it was like 161 to 249 head-to-head bet, and I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe they had Wilder up on that. And I don't know. I think it's crazy. Who is Wilder fought? Who is he? And Steve, you said he actually got stung against somebody.
Oh, Harold Scanyers. In fact, he got dumped right. Oh, I mean, it was a hard knockdown, Gabe. It was at the Fantasy Springs, wasn't it, Gabe?
Yeah, it was at Fantasy Springs. It was an uppercut that put him down. Just folded him. Just dropped him like a bad habit. And he got up, put the guy away. But man, it was a shaky moment. It was a real shaky moment.
You know, because I seen the Areola Stubborn fight, the second one, and you know Areola had, you know, he was aggressive and he may or may not have had him in trouble, but he threw a shitload of punches. But you could tell the power difference between Areola's punches and Stubborn. When Stubborn hit Areola, it was like twice as hard. That guy can crack. And
yeah.
Yeah, and if he gets inside Wilder, who's never been tested, he's going to knock him out. And I say he's going to knock him out in the sixth round.
Well, Jeff, don't spend all your money at one place when you cash your ticket.
I won't. Steve, if you're there, there's going to be free vodka coming your way, man.
Oh, in that case, go Bermaine Stavern. Absolutely. Jeff, you have a great Christmas, okay?
All right, you too.
And that's it for this week's edition of TNR. Listen, we hope everyone out there has a very safe Xmas, and next week we'll be back with our year-end awards on behalf of Gabriel Montoya. This is Steve Kim saying, till the next round, goodbye, everybody.